ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Drivers, start your engines!
Green flag is waving, and we're off and running here at Dover.
Josh Berry ready to roll here at the Monster Mile.
Checkered flag is in the air. Josh Berry picks up the win. The 31-year-old from Hendersonville, Tennessee, picks up his third career NASCAR Xfinity Series win.
Christian Craig gets into the back seat and loses the bike. Now he's in third, fourth, fifth, sixth. He'll drop back to seventh. And Hunter Lawrence has raced himself to a victory in Denver. Jason Anderson claims the victory, round number 16, and it's Eli Tomac. He is the Monster Energy AMA Supercross champion.
This has been impeccable by Pecco Bagnaia. He's going to get this job done. Quateraro's leaving it too late. It has been brilliant. Bagnaia, he reigns in Spain. The Ducati van wins the Red Bull Grand Prix of Spain.
Green flag this time, you go. Racing at Barber Motorsport Park, and VK will go down into turn one first. Swatch Pelot versus VK and O'Ward, etc. Here they come. Pato O'Ward up against Alex Pelot. He's going to keep the front spot. Pato O'Ward, who had a frustrating start to the year. Pato O'Ward!
Second flag, baby.
The ninja
nice drive.
Is back.
Excellent, excellent job. Well
he
deserved.
He wins at Barber Motorsport Park.
Green flag racing at Laguna Seca. Final corner, Blomqvist, he's not close enough. If Philippe can just keep it straight, he does, coming off of the corner. Here it is. Konica Minolta Racing wins at Laguna Seca. Pfaff Motorsports and GTD Pro, they take first place. And there's the birthday boy, Jan Halen, the Belgian for Wright Motorsports. They engineered a win for a different team yesterday. Today, Wright Motorsports backs it up with victory at Laguna Seca in IMSA.
Free, and look at this Monday crowd.
Darn right, everybody stayed watching some racing on a Monday.
Backstretch spin. Single car, Tyler Reddick.
You get to thinking about it, I'm going back racing.
Another good jump for the 9 of Chase Elliott. Can he get clear?
Yes.
Yes, he does.
One lap to go for Chase Elliott to become the fourth and final Hendrick driver to visit victory lane this season.
Hey, boys.
It's the 14th career win for second-generation star. It's his first oval track win in 46 starts. The ninth different driver to win in 11 races this year.
Greetings. Welcome to NASCAR America Motor Mouths. Nate Ryan here with Jeff Burton, Steve Letarte. Later on the show, we'll have Supercross legend Ricky Carmichael joining us, along with newly minted 250 champion Jett Lawrence. Lee Diffie also be joining us as well. But we just saw it. Big weekend of motorsports, and it just ended today. We watched the conclusion of the NASCAR Cup Series race at Dover Motor Speedway. What'd you guys think?
An extended weekend, which nobody wanted. I was happy to see some fans were able to come back out again on a Monday. It ran out. It's awful for everybody. Luckily for the teams, the next week is at Darlington, so a little bit closer to home. But, you know, I was a bit nervous heading to Dover, not knowing how the car would perform, a short practice. Maybe my nerves were for good reason. We saw five cars spin out or wreck in practice. We saw some single car wrecks in the race. But in the end, I thought that it had a little bit of everything. Tire strategy was important as far as saving some tires, pitting at the right time. There was a green flag pit stop that got messed up by a caution. And in the end, I thought it was a kind of a head-to-head battle between a defending champ or a champion in Chase Elliott and this new rising superstar in Ross Chastain. And I think Ross Chastain, this one's going to sting, Jeff, because I thought he had a chance. I don't think he did anything wrong. I just think Chase Elliott took it from him and won the race.
Yeah, well, first of all, what an incredible crowd on Sunday. What a shame it rained because that place was packed. Well, it was fun to see. Dover, when it's packed, has an environment that's very unique, very loud. That was good to see. Listen, I thought Chase Elliott just took the win. I thought Chase Elliott just said, okay, it's time to go. I'm going to flex my muscles. I'm going to win this race. And he just took the win. I don't think Ross Chastain did a thing wrong there. He just got outrun. And now Chase Elliott doesn't have to listen to it anymore.
Right, right.
Hey, I won. Right. I can do it. Like, he does not have to listen to why your teammate's winning and you're not. Now, Hendrick Motorsports, and in my opinion, Chevrolet just continues to flex their muscles. They're just doing it better than everybody else. And now you got him in victory lane as well.
Yeah, it was a really important win for Chase because, as you mentioned, Jeff, the last Hendrick driver to win this season. But also, he ends a 26 race winless streak. But he hadn't won an oval, Stevie, since the 2020 championship race at Phoenix. And he talked about it after the race today. He's had a lot get away. And we talked about it on the podcast a few weeks ago. He and Alan Gustafson have kind of struggled to put a race together. And today, Chase Elliott said that was the key to this win, was they put a complete race together. On a day of a lot of strategy plays, they executed correctly.
So it's funny because during this downtime, I don't think anyone pointed a finger internally or even externally. Like, we had this pointed discussion about how is the 9, and we were kind of like, well, we're surprised they haven't won. We think they're going to win because, you know, Chase is going to have to start answering some difficult questions. Alan and him are going to have to sit down and figure out what the issue was. It wasn't a question of if or when, but a bigger question of could they get through it. It's easy to say, but it's hard to do. And all your teammates who have your equipment are winning races. Now that this is behind them, I think Jeff points out Chevrolet and Hendrick Motorsports, I think this is a scary proposition for the rest of the field because now they have 4 locked in. So now in a season with very small practice windows and so much to learn, they don't really have any other priorities other than playoff points and you know, waiting for the playoffs to get here. I mean, look at the leaderboard, right? Now all 4 of their names are in yellow. 4 out of the 9 names out of 1 camp. Jeff, 15 minutes of practice. You've been to almost every race. It goes by in a blink. Having this kind of agenda already checked off is going to help.
Well, and this is a different year than in the past. I think in the past, we heard drivers say, hey, we're going to experiment, we're going to try things. I think that's a little harder this year because there's so many unknowns. We saw how many people wrecked at Dover this weekend, right? A lot of that has to do with just they don't know this car, they don't understand it. And so, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, we're going to go test because they're already winning, but what does that mean? With 15 minutes of practice, with limited track time, I think it changes the game. And we have seen over and over and over how playoff points matter. You cannot just say, hey, we won, now we can go and have bad races. It doesn't work like that. This all was from practice. I mean, when was the last time we saw this at California? Now we saw it here. I mean, these short practices are so difficult because, Steve, you gotta, when they drop the green flag, you gotta go. Like, you can't go out and say, well, I'm gonna ride around and feel my car, see how it feels, does it drive okay? No, you got 15 minutes, you got to roll. And so when you go to a track like Dover, you go to a track like California, we're going to Darlington this coming weekend.
Oh, that will be so much easier.
It's going to be so much easier.
So what do you do? Roll out there and just ride around and the first lap on tires is the best? So it's putting these drivers and teams in a very unique situation. I will say this, Chase Elliott fans, I know you're everywhere. Don't write me bad letters. The best thing for Hendrick Motorsports, hear me out, is for Chase Elliott to be the last guy to win. And when I say that, what makes any organization great is that when other teams can push each other internally. If Alex Bowman can be pushing and making Chase Elliott better, that's what you want. Kyle Larson, we know he's pushing. They've got all their guys winning races. And whoever's the last guy to win, it just is what it is. And that's when Rick Hendrick is back smiling. He's sitting there saying, okay, I got all this figured out. And they're going to make each other better. If you're going to win races, you got to beat the guys in this building. And that will make Chase Elliott better. That will push the most popular driver in the sport. That will push him to be better and ultimately push him to win more races.
Well, Rick Hendrick and Chase Elliott, not the only ones that are smiling because it is NASCAR's most popular driver. So I'm sure we've got a lot of Chase Elliott fans who want to talk to us today. A lot of phone calls, I'm sure, on a very eventful day at Dover. And we're going to get started with Shelby here on NASCAR America Motor Mouth. Shelby, welcome to the program. What you got?
If Chase Elliott was on the line, my question would obviously be, what is the biggest difference in the steering in this year's race car from last year's race car? And also, thank you for being my favorite driver.
All right, there you go. I'll give it to the driver. I know physically what's different. It's a completely different system. Just how it operates under the hood is nothing, anything at all like the other car. But from the actual feedback, I know you've talked to a lot of drivers, it seems to be much quicker. And I think that's some of these single car wrecks is just you get to the point where you, I don't want to say they get behind on the steering, but if you used to move your hands, you know, a couple inches, that perhaps is too much on this car. You have to almost slow everything down.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. And actually on pit road and in the garage area, you have to turn the car a great deal. And on the track, you don't turn it much at all. And so you get behind this a little bit. Now, what we are seeing here is that drivers aren't overcorrecting and driving the right front into the wall, which is what we were seeing early in the year. The drivers have learned we cannot overcorrect these cars, meaning if you turn it to the right to catch the car when it's loose, keeping it from spinning out, you don't turn it too far to the right. It hangs the right and head on into the wall. The drivers are learning how to do that. That's a good thing. But it's just a quicker steering. You turn the wheel this much, the car goes like that, as opposed to last year, you have to turn it this much to get the car to go the same direction.
And the overcorrection seemed to be the problem with Martin Truex Jr. when he had his issue with Ross Chastain in the last lap.
It was really odd looking to me. It's almost like when Ross came up, it kind of pushed the nose of Martin's car up, and then he turned left to get out of the wall, and the next thing you know, he's pointed to the inside wall. Mm-hmm. And now he got behind on the steering. But right here, he thinks he's got the spot, and he didn't. Getting pushed up in the wall, he turned away from the wall, and now he's pointing to the inside wall. And it was really odd. I mean, if I'm Martin Truex, I'm thinking this is my spot right here. I mean, I don't blame Martin for being upset. I can't completely blame Ross for blocking him. But you got to know when you block somebody, that's going to come back to you. If I'm driving the 19 car and I got that kind of run through the middle of one and two, that's my spot. You're not coming up on me.
So that happened while Ross and Martin Truex Jr. were racing for third last lap, Stephen. We were talking about before the show. Truex was very frustrated at the fact that Chastain was, as he put it on his team radio, Truex was saying that Chastain was mirror driving, and Truex did not like that. They had a post-race discussion. Truex left frustrated. I'm sure he didn't like what Ross Chastain had to hear. What's your take on that entire situation?
Well, so I think the evolution of how races go on has continued to change since the 80s, the 90s. This isn't a new conversation, right? From Dale Sr. to Jeff Gordon, from Jeff Gordon to Jimmy Johnson, what was an acceptable level of aggression? What was the acceptable level of positions? You know, when I first entered NASCAR, if you ran a guy down, you expected to get a hand out the window. And given the position, you've kind of proven you were faster. Then it got to the point where using the air to block became acceptable and not acceptable. What I've learned through my entire career is that the drivers have to police this themselves. And I don't think either of them are wrong, because they both are professional race car drivers who both win races. Now, one is a champion, and perhaps the champion's voice should be heard more. But if Ross Chastain listened to every veteran, would he be a two-time winner this year? Right, because he has his own style. I have thought that Ross has been a little less aggressive than we have seen in years past. I don't have as big a problem with the mirror driving throughout the day. I don't love this move right here. For the win, that's all fair in my opinion. But I believe there was an opportunity for Ross to put a few more coins in the bank with Martin Truex Jr. Like, I know I made it hard on you all day, but when you finally got the run on the last lap, I'm going to give you the top in 3 and 4. Now, I still may beat you to the line, but I'm going to give you the top. I don't think he meant to do anything back, but I wonder if Ross isn't going to look at that after and be like, you know, I don't think I was in the wrong, but I could have been closer to the right and only given up 1 point. I already got my wins, not an enemy I want to have, because Truex is going to be around him all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, they both are fast.
So Ricky Carmichael's on the show later, and I can guarantee you that he will tell you that drivers don't come with an owner's manual.
Yeah.
Like, there's no code. You have your own code. And one guy thinks one thing's right, and another guy thinks another. And that's just how it is. That's how it's always been. There's no rule about blocking, not blocking in NASCAR. You do what you think's right. And the guy behind you, he's got to deal with it, and he's got to do what he thinks right. And that's where we get in these situations where you shouldn't do that, I shouldn't do that. I can tell you that when I was a young driver, I came into NASCAR, and there were times people were like, you're too aggressive at this point in the event, practice, qualifying, whatever. And then I remember Dale Jr. running one of his first Xfinity races, and I got my hand out the window giving him the number one salute, because I'm like, what are you doing? Calm down, right? And it was like, why are you doing this right now? Right, and after the race, he's like, why are you mad? And it was because it wasn't the time. But he was young and ready to go, and he wasn't wrong. I thought he was wrong, but that didn't make him wrong.
Yeah.
And everybody has a different code, and you just got to live by it and try to be as respectable as your code allows you to be.
The concern moving forward is that right there wrecked Martin Truex Jr.
Right.
However it happened.
Right.
Right.
So you have to ask yourself next time, is it the one car that gets spun?
Exactly.
You know, my point is, I don't think Truex thought he was going to wreck with whatever he did, but the result was the 19 ended up wrecked.
That's part of my question here is that you said Ross Chastain, you called him a rising superstar, and I agree. Like, he is unquestionably maybe the best driver so far this year in the Cup Series. Last week, A.J. Allmendinger said, I could be racing a future champion this year when he was racing from Winnetka. But the narrative with Ross has been, you know, to your point, Jeff, the discussions of veterans with younger drivers. He's had that discussion with Kevin Harvick, with Kurt Busch. Have we oversold that a little bit, or does that calculus change a little bit now that he's got two wins and he's going to be racing these guys for a title, and he's like, maybe I'm not going to take your advice so much anymore.
Listen, Ross Chastain is going through a transformation trying to figure out how can I be a Cup champion. And we've seen this over and over where a guy comes in and he's super aggressive and he's got to dial it back. We've seen other guys come in that need to gain aggression. They got to find a way to be aggressive. Very few young drivers have ever been able to come into the sport and not go through a transition of learning when and how often to be aggressive. I don't think Ross Chastain is out there and just, I'm going to make everybody mad. He's out there for him.
Yeah.
He's being a selfish race car driver, which, by the way, is what his owner wants him to be. He's got to learn. And he wants to. I've had this conversation with Ross. He doesn't want everybody to be mad at him. He wants to be a good citizen in the community. Yeah. He's learning how to do it. And it doesn't happen overnight. He's a young race car driver that's learning how to win races and consistently run in the front. I can promise you, you race different for third than you do for 25th. It's completely different. And he's learning how to do that.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones. NASCAR joining us on NASCAR America Motor Miles. NASCAR, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you all. So up to this point, you know, I felt that Ford has been running good, Chevy, and it was Toyota. But after today in the last couple races, especially with Chevy now, like you said, Steve, flexing their muscle and Toyota gaining some ground, I'm feeling like maybe Ford is starting to get a step behind or they're losing a step. What say you all? Do you all feel the same?
It seems clear to me that at Dover, and I would say if I had to grade for the year, Ford seems to be the distant third. They are very organized and efficient at Daytona. Cindric getting the win, but they had a lot of horses at the end of that race that could have won that race. And I believe that as the information is kind of matriculating out and as these teams are learning, it just seems to me that Toyota had some early cooling issues, maybe mechanical woes earlier in the year. Since they're past that, I mean, look at the rundown, right? You have three Chevys, a Toyota, another Chevy. Like, it's a mix up front. My bigger concern in the Ford camp is I would want to be excited about Chris Buescher running eighth, but I'm not excited that Chris Buescher ran eighth as the best Ford. Right, like great for RFK and Chris Buescher, sat on the pole, ran eighth. That is, I don't want to take the wind out of his sails, but you're looking at the only Ford inside the top. Well, no, I guess Kevin was behind him. Two Fords inside the top 10.
You're looking at three Penske's outside the top 25.
Man, it's just, that's rare. Yeah.
Well, on the season, one win.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a Daytona. I mean, you're talking about Kevin.
Well, two
Harvick.
With Briscoe, right?
I'm sorry, so, Briscoe. I missed Briscoe.
Yeah. Two with Briscoe, so, but it's just not consistent.
Yeah, they have not had the speed that the Chevrolet's. We've said it on this show over and over. Chevrolet is changing the game. Chevrolet, with their new engineering program, how they've got all the teams working together, are going to move the ball and make other organizations and manufacturers change the way they're doing things. They just are. Toyota's been trying it, but they don't have the number of cars they need. And it's driving manufacturers into having to work together and teams having to work together more than they ever have. Chevrolet is doing a great job.
What the bow tie is doing that's impressive has nothing to do with Hendrick Motorsports, because there's nothing they've done this year. Maybe getting all four wins is a bit surprising so early. But, so Hendrick is still fast? I mean, they've won the last two championships. You know, what's impressive is Trackhouse, now JTG. We've seen Reddick be fed. That's what when Jeff points out the manufacturers, that's what I see, is that they found a way to make sure they always have another one up when somebody trips. And Hendrick, to your point about Hendrick back, let's not forget, this was Alex Bowman and Kyle Busch's battle until the pit cycle caught them wrong. They couldn't recover. So you know, when Alex Bowman tripped up, I'm not even sure he made a mistake. When it didn't go right for the 48 with the timing of the yellow, the 9's there. right? And Joe Gibbs Racing, I know the 19 didn't get into the battle for the win, but, you know, the 18 kind of got cycled out there. Well, here's the 20. Here's the 19. That's what makes these organizations so tough. It's like you don't know where the fight's coming from. Everywhere you turn around, there's a different punch.
Yeah, no question. Obviously, Ford's got a lot of work to do. We'll see if they can keep it up here in the next 15 races. We're going to head to the break, and when we come back on the other side, Ricky Carmichael joining us here with Jeff and Steve to talk a little Supercross and maybe a little bit of NASCAR as well.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
It was a full weekend of racing with Supercross in Denver this last weekend. And right here, this man now joins us, Ricky Carmichael, on that Fame number 4. He'll be on the Dale Jr. Download on Thursday. He's been warned by both Jeff and I here that when you sit down in those Dirty Mo Studios, there's something about it, Ricky. The truth comes out. Every story you've ever not wanted to tell somehow gets broadcast. So it's going to be interesting. Tune in on Thursday, 6 o'clock, to hear what Junior and Ricky have to say. But listen, it's a NASCAR audience and a NASCAR show. So first, I want to give you a little bit of NASCAR props. We all know what you've done on two wheels, and the show's not long enough to really go through it all. But over 75 NASCAR starts, Xfinity and trucks. I was looking it up. A top five at Dover. So when we talked Dover, you've been there. You've done it.
That's right.
Give us your thoughts on the Monster. It looked like it was aggressive this weekend.
I don't think it was well earned. I definitely got lucky. There's no doubt about that. So we'll get that off the box. I got fourth at Talladega. That was fun. That was interesting. It was going nose to tail. And then tandem, and got the pole at Atlanta one time. That was a lot of fun. But just the experience in general was what was cool for me. Learning the fans, learning the people, and just how nice everyone was, and new faces every single weekend, and the challenge. It was something, memories that I'll have for a lifetime.
Well, no one sits on a pole at Atlanta without earning it. I can promise you that, because that is work. But hey, so before we get to two wheels, so what do you think about what's going on this year in NASCAR? I mean, to me, it's been an incredible start, but I'm real curious to get your take on it.
Well, I love it. I love the challenges that the new car is giving these teams. I think for everyone in there, like, it's got to be frustrating with limited time. It kind of brings me back to when I got into NASCAR, when NASCAR, you couldn't go testing anymore. Right. So now, like, I'm behind the eight ball. I was already behind the eight ball. Now I'm really behind the eight ball because I can't get more track time. But I feel like it puts a lot of pressure on the teams, you know, and really forces their hand to get in the sim and learn everything, and just every single track you go to is uncharted water. So I like that. Me as a fan, I love NASCAR. So that's what's intriguing to me. It's like, which team can adapt to what they're given to that weekend and those conditions?
So I know it's different because it is two wheels, but I want your opinion, because I think you can bring that veteran, that champion, kind of that legacy guy into this conversation. We saw Truex and Chastain just this week kind of get into it. We've seen some young guys win. It's clear that everyone out there isn't driving under this mythical code that's the same for everyone. So talk about in the sport you grew up in, right? When you were the young guy, how did it work? And then as you became that veteran, did you have that response? Like, how did you handle it with the younger riders?
Well, on the opening segment, you guys made some great points, especially you, Jeff, with each generation that comes up, in my opinion, race is different. More aggressive, sometimes less care. They're more careless, not thinking ahead. I feel like you talked about it. Ross Chastain, he's running up front. And guys up front, to your point, they race a different way. Same thing happens in Supercross. Guys that race in 8th to 12th place race different when they're up front. You know, it's a completely different aspect when you're up there. There's more give and take. There's more respect, I feel like, and you don't have to look over your shoulder as much. And I feel like Ross is caught in that tailspin right now, or caught in that web, to where he's running up front. It's new to him against, you know, multi-time champions, and it's just different like that. I just feel like you have to have a little bit more respect for other drivers when you're running up there. Not that he's doing, to your point, he's not doing anything wrong. He don't know any better until he learns that. Now, if he's doing the same things 2 years from now, then it's on him. That's my opinion.
So I'd love to get your take on this, too. So when does that happen? Like, you know, when I look back on my career, I didn't have a
oh, Jeff, you need to start doing this, right? Just seems like you just learn, and I don't know if you had the same experience.
It took me 2 years, probably a year and a half. The first year, I was just like a ball of fire every single week and crashing all the time. And when I moved in the premier class of Supercross, and, you know, I was riding way out of my league, trying to hang with guys that I couldn't. I should have just taken my fifth, sixth, seventh, and not tried to go for the wins and podiums. Then the second year, I started to get on the podium quite a few times, and I won Daytona Supercross. So those fifths became thirds, and I feel like I said, about a year and a half, I started learning how to race at the top level in the premier class. So I feel, you know, and experience. You guys know. I mean, it takes a long time to learn that race etiquette running up front. And I think in the next year and a half, like if Ross continues the progression that he's doing, that he's on, and can run up front like that and get that experience week in and week out, he'll have it soon.
Well, if you're a Supercross fan, you're going to love the next segment. We got Lee Diffie is going to join us along with Jet Lawrence and Ricky here. We're kind of picking his brain on four wheels because we're not going to claim to be Supercross experts. It amazes me. We were having this conversation earlier that I don't ever want to say it's great for people to wreck. I hate to see wrecks, right? But I love that they're wrecking now because I think it just proved what we all know, which is they're elite, right? They're the best of the best. But now they've found this car, and either maybe it's the lack of experience with the car, maybe it's just the way it drives. We saw Kyle Larson spin out by himself this weekend. This is a guy last year that's been compared to AJ Foyt, everyone out there. And I think for a guy like me, when I see these premier drivers wreck on their own, it's refreshing. I think it's easier and refreshing as an analyst for me to go, see, to the fans, they are right at the ragged edge. Jeff, you've driven it. Your son's out there trying to do it now. We talked some about motocross. What's your thoughts of what these guys are having to do with this new car?
I think emotionally you have to have the confidence to be willing to fail.
Yeah.
I think the only way you can find the limit of a car like this and a tire like this is to cross it. And I really think, and this is really hard for a team to do, but I watched Tyler Reddick at the Charlotte test. I think he hit the wall three or four times. And they were like, go figure it out.
Yeah.
You know? And you're starting to see people that are willing to make mistakes.
Yeah.
They're going to get there sooner rather than the guys that aren't. And you don't want to say that as a car owner, as a crew chief, limited parts, limited cars. But the only way you're going to figure it out is to go drive it over its limit and put it in a position where you might wreck. But, Ricky, I don't think there's any other way. I think if you're dancing with that edge of grip and it's that razor sharp, you just got at some point cross over.
Well, it's like testing in motocross, supercross racing. You have to test at race pace. Because if you don't test at race pace, and it's like what these guys are, you can't just go around like the limited practice. You talked about it. You got to go out there and you got to run it hard. Because then you don't know what you got if you don't run it hard. It's going to be bad when these guys wreck. For sure, it's going to cost a lot of money. But to your point, they're not going to know that limit. And it's the same thing in supercross racing. You have to test at 100%. Because then when you get to the race and your motorcycle ain't running good, you're going to say, well, it's not working the way it did when it was testing. Like, well, when you test at 90%, it's not going to work when you're racing at 100%.
Right, yeah. So. Yeah, a lot of guys can get to, I mean, I could probably get to the, you know, 2 seconds off. It's the last, it's that last 10%.
It's last 2/10.
And as you guys know, the bikes, the cars probably work completely different.
Oh, yeah.
That last little bit.
Oh, completely. All right, well, it's a fan call-in show. We have a fan on the line. Josh, you're on Motor Mouse.
Yeah, thank you, gentlemen. We know that this is 45 years with the Motor Racing Network, and this has been their last broadcast. Out of all of the races, either as a fan or a crew chief or a driver, I know, Jeff, you've had a victory or two at the Monster Mile. Steve Letard, of course, you've had a lot of success with Jeff Gordon and Dale Earnhardt Jr. What races really come to mind as we look back over these last 45 years?
Ooh, with MRN? You know, that kind of question takes me back in time. And, the race that it just always stands out to me was the 500 with David Pearson and Richard Petty, you know, crashing, going before the start-finish line, and Dale Emmon running out, literally running out, going to push the car across the start. I mean, that's good stuff. And I would love to hear, like, the MRN call for something like that, because –
you know, when I think MRN and the last broadcast at Dover is what you're referring to, I just go back to history because they've been around for so long and seen so many different things.
Yeah, it's funny how different things remind you of different places. I'm sure it's like that when you come into a stadium or we pull into a racetrack, but it's those voices, right? Even at dinner, like you run into one of them at dinner and you have a conversation, you walk away thinking, man, you know, like Barney Hall. Anytime you would run into Barney Hall, man, you could hear all those calls and just how significant they were and great. But I'll say Dover, it's interesting because, you know, we've been going to Dover for so long, multiple times a year, this being the only Dover race. I think I want to know, from the Supercross side and from the racing side, as much as I love some of these markets, I do think it helps going to them sometimes less. I think it allows the fans to all come out and really make it an event. You don't think you're coming back in a few weeks or a few months. And I think we saw some of that with COVID. I know Supercross, 100%. You guys lived in the same stadium
That's where I was going. Without a doubt, when we went through COVID and we were doing the residencies there, we always got a better turnout when it was just two residencies, two times rather than three times, just, it, you know, for whatever circumstances. And I think it builds that demand. You know, it's like, oh my goodness, we only have one opportunity to go watch these guys race. You got to make it then, rather than if you go there two or three times, you know, it's more of a lighter crowd.
Yeah, when the star power's in town, you definitely want to go see them while they're there, no doubt. Well, coming up, we're going to have a little Supercross segment after this. It's going to be a lot of fun. Our buddy Lee Diffie's going to bail us out. Come on here. And you're going to get joined by our man Jet Lawrence is going to join you. Yes. Ricky and Jet and Lee Diffie after the break.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Welcome back to NASCAR America Motor Mouths, where Saturday in Denver, Eli Tomac clinched his second 450 championship before a hometown crowd in Denver, packed house, eager fans looking for him to clinch that title. In 2020, he won his first title in front of an empty stadium in Salt Lake City. So this was quite the scene where he could celebrate by pouring beer in his exhaust, Ricky, with all the fans there. So welcome you back in. We've got Ricky Carmichael, our Supercross analyst, and joining us, we have our play-by-play Supercross announcer, Lee Diffie. Both of you guys will be calling the season finale, and you're both here. Welcome to NASCAR America Motor Mouths, Lee.
Hey, Nate. Hey, LC. Thanks for having me on.
Good. Yep. Good to see you, my man. It was a real incredible season for Eli Tomac. And the reason that I say that, I mean, if you're Eli Tomac, you were at Monster Energy Kawasaki for a really long time. And then you take a leap of faith because really that Monster Energy Yamaha Star Racing team hadn't proved themselves in 450 Supercross yet. So the people outside were probably thinking, man, this is a gutsy move for Eli Tomac to do that. But I think us inside, internally, knew what that team could give Eli. And Eli wanted some freedom to change some things on his bike. And if he wanted to try different stuff on the suspension, he didn't have to go through so much red tape. And I feel like you have to be able to do that this day and age. You know, if you feel and the rider feels like it's something right, just go out there and try it and give that rider the responsibility. And if it's not, okay, then you take it back in-house. So he came out, and you got to give credit not only to Eli, but that race team as well, because Eli, as a starter his whole career, hasn't been the best. There's no secrets about it. And then he just comes out this year firing. I would say on an average, and Lee, you could tell me if I'm wrong, he was a completely better starter this year than he ever has been. And I just don't think that the team gets enough credit.
Well, and think about, too, as you well know, because the team purchased your old training facility, the Goat Farm. They moved from one coast to the other. They had a lot of personnel change their lives. So for Eli, his life didn't change. He stayed where he was in Colorado. So all he was doing was working for a different team and a different manufacturer, which is huge in itself. But for the team, holistically, it was a massive change. And for Jeremy Coker and for the whole organization, I think to achieve that, in its first year with Eli was something special. And I want to go back just really quickly before we get to Jet Lawrence. I want to go back to when we were in Boston a couple of weeks ago, sat down, had about 15 minutes with our producer, Aaron Feldstein, and myself with Eli Tomac. And I said to him, take this however, you know, whatever way you want to take it. I said, did you expect this to happen this year? And he was very swift to say, no. And I don't mean that the wrong way. He said, you know, I don't mean to be not positive. I don't, you know, not being negative, but I didn't want to be that cocky to think that I could just waltz on into a new team, new manufacturer, and win straight away. He said, I thought that would be quite tough. I thought I'd have a chance, but I didn't expect to be champion straight away. Maybe needed some settle-in time. So, yes, there's been some attrition in this championship, but even if the riders who have not been participating for the majority of this season, even if they were there, I don't think the result would have been any different. Do you?
I don't. I just think he was that good. And you go back and you see how many wins he's won. He's at 44. He's tied with Chad Reed for the fourth all-time winning Supercross racer. He's got one more to get into to that, to claim that fourth spot, to not be in a tie. And just with all those wins and all the years of learning things to do right, things to do wrong, I mean, I thought he could do what he did this year. And it's great to see him finally throw away the old Eli. You know, for so many years, it's like, okay, is Eli going to roll around in seventh and eighth place? That's not the case this year. So for me, it's refreshing to see Eli be able to make that. And I had high hopes for him. It was unfortunate that not all the guys were in the series for all of the races. But at the end of the day, you know, I still think he would have been one of the best guys to beat.
All right, so Eli Tomac becomes a 450 champion. We also have the 250 East champion joining us now on the program. We've got Jet Lawrence here with us as well, joining Lee Diffie and Ricky Carmichael. And here we see Jet Lawrence celebrating with champagne in Foxborough after he clinched the title a couple weeks ago. So, guys, I'll let you take away the interview with Jet Lawrence.
Well, Jet, you've had a little bit of time. You've had a little bit of time for it to all sink in. And winning championships is nothing new for you. But to win a Monster Energy AMA Supercross Championship certainly is something different. So now that you've had time to digest it and to think about it and to get all of those emails and texts and phone calls of congratulations, how is it and how much does it mean to you?
It's awesome, obviously. And it's cool to get this Supercross Championship because, I mean, I've had the most struggles with this. I've been knocked down so many times, a lot of crashes, injuries. So it's definitely feels really good. And hopefully I can just keep clicking off some more. But no, I got obviously all the messages from friends, families, and I loved every single one of them. And now it's sunk in. It's kind of already it's calmed down already, really. It's already onto the outdoor championship, focusing on that. So it's funny how I celebrate on the day, soaked with it then, and then the next day it was radio, let's focus on the outdoors and defending. So it changed pretty quickly, but no, it definitely feels wonderful.
Hey, Jetson, so with now that you've got the championship under your belt, like, did you realize how much pressure you had on your shoulders, and what is that like knowing that you checked it off the box and you can go into Salt Lake City this weekend with no pressure and that championship looming on your shoulders?
It's definitely nice because you can go in and definitely cause a little bit more drama. You don't have as much pressure on you. So it's definitely going to be nice. It's going to be fun. Going to be kind of just try and help Hunter as much as he can. It's a pretty big points gap, but I mean, it's a, going to go in there and just help out Big Bro and see if we can maybe even get two Hondas in a title. So it's 18 points, pretty big gap, but it can, anything can happen. So we'll have to wait and see. But no, it's definitely very nice.
Can we go back to Boston for a minute, mate, and back to the main? And wasn't the best start you've ever made in your career, but you very methodically and cleverly just started making your way towards the front, chipping them off one at a time. And then it was like this. You turned up the heat on Faulkner and you went by him, and then he kind of went off the track, I think questionably, may have shortcut the track a little bit, and he got back by you right before the finish jump. And then it was almost like you said, all right, I've shown him what I can do. I'm going to be smart here. And Ricky mentioned it in our commentary. I'm going to be smart here and I'm going to ride, and second's good enough. I know I'm going to win the championship. Is that how it went down? Could have you turned up the heat a little bit more on Faulkner? Did you want that win in your title victory?
I definitely did. No, I wanted to get that, but when that I had a little go at him, and I could have been a little more dirty and gone across even more and really kind of closed him out, but I would have thought he would have stayed on the track. So, I mean, I closed him out enough to know that, hey, you're not going to get around me if you actually stay on the track. But because he went off the track and then decided to click a couple of gears down, it ended up just kind of sucking. So I'm just like, Radio, if you want it this bad, you can kind of have it there. Because I know if I try to do anything, try to stay in front of it, I'm either going to get put on the ground and either be off the podium, which my goal was to be on podium all this season. So, I mean, it was just the smart decision. I thought I had one extra lap that last time. I'm like, okay, Radio, let's actually go at it and see. But he went inside. I'm like, that's a bit of a strange line to take for one more lap to go. But I ended up looking up and seeing the checker flag. I'm like, ah, oh, damn it. But no, it was I was kind of playing it smart the whole race. I was behind him. We kind of both got a bit of a bad start. I caught him a little bit in the first few laps because I think he got stuck behind someone, but eventually got around him. And then I was kind of just following him the whole time, just following. And then that one time I just got close. So I'm like, you know what? Let's just put a bit of a pass on to see if I can pressure him maybe into a mistake of washing the front, because it was a very slippery track. It was had a very hard base with like gravel dirt on top. So it was very easy to lose traction. So, I mean, I gave him a bit of pressure and he didn't buckle. And I mean, shortcut kind of sucked, but hey, it is what it is. But at the end of the day, I end up getting what he more so wanted. So, I mean, losing one win ain't a big deal if you end up getting a championship, getting a second. So, I mean, it sucks, but hey, I'm still pumped about it.
Hey, Jed, I know you've learned a lot this year from the things you've done right, the things you've done wrong the last 2 years. And what would you say, of all the things that you've learned, what's the biggest thing that has helped you, especially this year, that is going to help you in the future?
I think the biggest thing was staying calm before the race, because when I was first coming in, like with I think it was last year actually, with Red Bull, I was feeling good, and I was got these custom Red Bull headphones, and I was wearing them down, listening to like kind of pretty exciting music and that stuff that was getting me pumped up, and I was actually pumping myself up too much, and that's why now, like, all my mechanic says to kind of, he doesn't really hype me up much. He just kind of says, just be Jet Lawrence. And that's just a nice light switch to kind of flick me on and just know that, hey, 80% Jet is good enough for this to win this race. So it's this kind of more so keep me calm. And even in the heated moments in a race, I've learned just to obviously maturing and experience. I just stay calm and I know, like, okay, you can have it here, but we still have a lot longer to go. I'll study a bit and then end up making a pass up after a little few more laps. But I think the biggest thing was just kind of keep myself calm and not getting too mad about tiny things where it makes me end up getting real heated and making silly mistakes that I shouldn't make, really. So I think it was just being calm and just kind of more so focusing on the end result, not just like in that moment of like, if someone hits me, they're going and punting it back. It's like, no, they bump you, okay, just go and pass them clean. It'll wreck them even more if I could pass them clean. But if they want to pass me, they have to try and bump me. So, I mean, the biggest thing was just trying to stay calm and focus on that end result.
Your Honda HRC 450 teammate, Chase Sexton, as you well know, won back-to-back 250 titles before then stepping up to the 450 class. So I'm going to ask you a question that Ricky and I get asked all the time. Are you ready for 450s now if there was a space to open up in next year's Supercross Championship? Or would you like another year and maybe on the opposing coast, maybe do the West Coast Championship next year in 250 before you step up to 450? Another year, different class, honing your racecraft for another season. I know you're probably not going to tell us what's really going on anyway, but it's all right. We've got to ask the question. So how do you feel about things and how do you feel about the future, especially with a 450 focus?
I'm feeling good. And if I had to go up on a 450 next week, I think I would definitely be ready, because watching what Eli's been doing, he's been doing pretty similar to what I've been doing on 250 to set in a bigger class with a lot more guys. And it's being smarter, really, putting himself in better positions and that stuff. And I see guys in the 450 make little silly mistakes, like same in 250. So, I mean, it's not like it's very far-fetched. And the speed on Supercross, most of the time I'm doing pretty similar lap times to 450 guys on a Supercross track. Yes, the track by main event is a lot more chewed out and that stuff, but with the extra power, you kind of gain that speed back with and kind of levels out a bit. But no, if I had to go race 450 next, let's say at Salt Lake, I would be up for it, up for the challenge. And I don't think I would be nervous at all. I think I wouldn't say I would go win the thing at all. I mean, there's stupidly fast guys out there, but I would definitely put a wheel in and have some fun with the big boys.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. That excites us. And listen, I know that you're in and around Johnny O'Mara, who's a legend of the sport all the time. There's another legend who happens to be on this call as well and on this show. The GOAT is super impressed with what you've done. He's very proud of you. And on behalf of everybody, all the fan base, thank you for your genuine appreciativeness of the crowd. You show your sportsmanship by shaking hands and hugging your opponents. You're a great ambassador to Honda and the sport and to Red Bull and everybody on your side. So from all of us, Jet, congratulations. Super season, mate, and thanks for coming on the show.
No, thank you guys very much. I appreciate coming on here. It's definitely an honor being on this with obviously the GOAT, and obviously you're the GOAT and commentator, Lee Diffrey, so I can't forget you, mate.
Oh, all right. Well, he's not only the GOAT commentator. I appreciate Diff also trying to break some news there on, you know, can we get Jet Lawrence in the 450 division next year, because I would love to see it. Yeah. I mean, I've heard so much about this kid. I've watched him this season a little bit, yeah. But I haven't had a chance to interview him. That's the first time I've heard him talk in, you know, at length in person. And he reminds me, Ricky, of a little bit. I don't know if I've got this right. You know, Lee's an Australian, so he probably know better than me. But like the Chad Reed quality that Australians seem to have about, like, they're great writers, but they're also great personalities and great quotes. And I think Supercross would love to have something like that.
Oh, 100%. I think he's the next generation of champions and riders. That guy has so much bike skill, something like I've never seen. And you just have to think that the kids watching him ride today are going to be following in his footsteps. A lot of kids look up to him. And the one thing that I really like about Jet Lawrence, other than his bike skill, is he is incredible with his fan interaction. I mean, he gets in there, gets the fans pumped up, and he's got a really bright future. I think the biggest thing for him is controlling the outside noise, because he's so popular. He has a lot of things going for him. And if he can keep that outside noise behind him and it not be a distraction, he's going to be a multi-time champion, probably one of the best that we've ever seen, in my opinion.
And in addition to that, Nate, you know, Ricky mentions this quite often, and so for any of the analysts on NBC Sports, you hear Chris Collinsworth saying it all the time on Sunday Night Football, the two Robbies with Premier League. You hear him talk about spatial awareness, and that kid has incredible spatial awareness. Ricky says it all the time. Even when he falls gracefully. He knows where he's going. He knows where the bike's going. He almost has a calculator on the inertia of the bike and himself and where he's going, and has saved himself so many times from injuries. Even though he was injured at the beginning of this season, was able to come back from that. And I think just by what he can do, he brings so much energy and excitement, because it's like, what's Jet going to do tonight? And I think that's somewhat daunting for his competitors. You know, it was a little bit like when Ricky was younger and Jeremy McGrath. And when you hear people like those guys and Ricky Johnson and Johnny O'Mara, Bob Hannett, like all these guys who are watching him as an 18-year-old, when a rider has the legends of the sport's attention, you know that he's special.
Yeah. Well, one more chance to watch Jet Lawrence this season. Saturday night, Salt Lake City, Lee Diffie will be on the call. We'll have Ricky Carmichael doing the analysis as well. Diff, thanks for joining us. And also can catch Ricky Carmichael at the Dale Jr. Download.
Yes.
Coming soon, right?
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. I believe it will be on Thursday. So exciting times, no doubt about that. And looking forward to it. Also looking forward to Salt Lake City. It's the final round of the Monster Energy Supercross Series. You guys make sure you tune in. And there's another championship on the line. We got the 250 showdown. So you got the East and the West meeting up. And hopefully we'll get to see someone win a championship there in the 250 West Division.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to the call from you and Diff. And thanks again for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Other side, coming back, NASCAR America Motor Mouths. More of your phone calls with Jeff Burton and Steve Letarte. Come back on the other side and join us.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Welcome back to NASCAR America Motor Mouths, and the Kyle Petty charity ride got started this past weekend. They are taking the green flag at Phoenix Raceway, site of the NASCAR Championship race on NBC. So Kyle Petty charity ride underway once again, a full-fledged effort this year after a pause for the pandemic the last 2 years. They're back in full effect this year. Great to see it. And we are back here, NASCAR American Motor Mouse, back here with Jeff Burton, Steve Letart, and your phone calls. We're going to get started with William on the line. William, welcome to NASCAR American Motor Mouse.
Hey, Nate. Thank you. So, Steve and Jeff, my question for you guys is, do you guys honestly think we're going to see a type of Kyle Larson year like we saw with his championship year last year?
Kyle Larson still has a remarkable talent, but last year's going to be hard to duplicate. I mean, it was an amazing run. I mean, both in the NASCAR world, out of the NASCAR world, the NASCAR wins the championship. Kyle Larson's going to have an amazing career, and I think it's unfair if we're going to continue to judge him off his initial championship year that is like one for the record books. Do I think he's going to go on to win a handful of races and be around in the later stages of the playoffs? I believe he will be, but I think it's unfair to expect him to try to duplicate what he did last year.
I think he's going to get better all year long. I think he's a serious threat for the championship. I still think he's the best driver on the racetrack right now, driving for the best organization and the best manufacturer at the moment. So I think he'll be a threat. And the second part of your question, no, there is not truth to the rumor that Rick Allen has training wheels on his bike out at the Kyle Petty charity ride.
We all want to know the answer to that question. Going back to the Kyle Larson part, though, he spun, you were talking about earlier, Steve. Yeah. I mean, he spun by himself at Dover, which speaks to, again, the level of the degree of difficulty of this next-gen car. And is that, can we kind of pin it on that? Is it just that he is struggling with figuring this thing out as much as anybody else, as much as he has seemed more than just a mere mortal last year when he won the championship?
Oh, I wouldn't put it as struggle. I'd say this is why you should cheer for Kyle Larson, because he's not going to ride around and take 8th or 9th or 10th is okay, that he's willing to, would you say, he's willing to fail. He's willing to get close enough to the edge that he's okay. Now, he's not probably happy about it, but he's okay to show the world that he's human, that he wrecked. He got a little too aggressive, he got in the gas, or something happened, the car got too loose, and he spun out. And I think that's what makes him who he is. Like, I think that was why he could jump in a dirt late model, and he's okay if he gets beat by the track champ. Yep, you were better than me today. And that humble approach, I think, you know, you got to go back and look the full scope of Kyle Larson, everything he's been through. And I think his talent behind the wheel has matured. He has matured. His comfort level as the organization. We all know Rick Kendrick very well as a mentor to put him in a position that it's okay. You don't have to be perfect. You can make mistakes. And if you just give us your best, that's going to be good enough. And unfortunately for most, his best is really, really, really good. So I think it's just one more reason that someone could cheer for Kyle Larson. The guy spun out on his own and, was okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's go back to the lines. Chandler joining us. Chandler, welcome to NASCAR American Motor Mouths.
Hey, guys. Now, I know this is a little bit early. I was going to ask you guys this on Wednesday, but I'm really curious. We got a lot of good paint schemes, you know, for this weekend at Darlington. And looking at, you know, all three series, you know, the Cup, Xfinity, and the truck, what is your guys' favorite paint scheme, throwback paint scheme from those three different series?
I'll be honest, I haven't seen a whole lot come out. I always love that we get to see them all when we go down there. I saw Fox is going to put three different Hall of Famers in the booth, so we get to hear Richard. Now, I can't wait to hear the King on a TV broadcast and Million Dollar Bill, and you have Bobby Labonte. So there's going to be a lot to tune in for this weekend. But I think that Darlington has done a great job of giving this race that identity of this throwback to allow the teams and sponsors, perhaps, is the one that don't get enough credit, Jeff. When the sponsors get behind it, they really get great.
Yeah, it's a great weekend. It's fun. You go down there and you see a lot of people that haven't been to the racetrack in a long time because they come and they see the car that they worked on or whatever it happens to be. Darlington's done a great job. Bragging a little bit, I thought NBC did a great job of building that thing up and running with it, and Fox is doing the same thing. I'm like you. I haven't seen them all yet. I like to wait the week of and start building myself up, so I haven't seen them all yet.
Okay. Is there one involving you this year? Because there's been one in the past, right?
I don't think you can throw back far. You can't throw back without finding a Jeff Burton scheme.
I'm not like, you know.
No, you did.
Casting aspersions been that long, but like you've been honored before on Throwback Weekend. He's a candidate for the NASCAR Hall of Fame. It's not like I'm casting aspersions on his career here.
Speaking of Hall of Fame, Wednesday. Right? The decisions are made on Wednesday, so Wednesday's show, I'm sure there's going to be some discussion So many great options. It's going to be interesting to see who goes in. Good luck. I hope it's the guy sitting next to us. It'll be great.
We'll have all the nominees and the inductees Wednesday. We'll learn who is going to be the Pioneer winner, the Modern Award winner, all of that. So a lot to come here on NASCAR America Motor Miles. A lot today. We appreciate you joining us. Thanks to Ricky Carmichael, Jet Lawrence, Lee Dippy for joining us as well. Talk to you next time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.